Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103, Lincoln 102.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911, unattended 400 lower level near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Rob.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue jeans, no further.
Control, high Frank, 401 is a route.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Private Officer Beat Radio. I am your host, Rick McCann. Glad that you are joining us on this beautiful, that depends on where you're at, I guess, beautiful Thursday morning, the 28th of April, 2016. And we've got a great show on tap for you today, a lot of information that we want to share with you as we are broadcasting live from our Charlotte, North Carolina office and studios. And we've got a lot of different topics and news to share with you and to go over today. We will be doing quite a few live remote shows over the next few months. In fact, we're taking our show on the road in just a couple of weeks. We'll be broadcasting live from Gulfport, Mississippi, down along the beautiful Gulf of Mexico. We'll also be in Shreveport, Louisiana next month, where we're teaching active shooter and also several training seminars for church security. And then in June, we'll be going up north. We'll be heading to the great state of Maine. And then in July, we'll be in the great state of Connecticut. We'll be talking there and doing some training on church security and use of force. And then in September, we'll be heading out to Las Vegas, Nevada, a great little city. Well, it's not really so little, but it is quite the city. And we'll be out there for a convention. And then October, we'll be doing our program as we spend a week out in California doing use of force training and attending the CalSEGA annual conference out there, the California Security Association that we've recently aligned with, CalSEGA. And so we've got a lot of traveling going on the rest of the year. Usually between April and October is when we do most of our training on the road and do most of our traveling, and we'll be doing a lot of our radio programs over the next 6 months from the road. I can tell you that right now, ahead of the time. But nonetheless, we're going to be very, very busy, and we hope that you, if you are in the area, will come out and attend some of the training or workshops that we'll be doing at the various locations. And we always have those scheduled. They're available on our website, or you can contact the help desk at privateofficer.com if you would like to get details on those upcoming dates and locations. Well, we do have a lot of information and news to share with you today. I tell you, we've got a busy schedule today and tomorrow. We're always very, very busy, but I don't know. Some days it just seems like it's never ending. The day goes on and on and on. And I can tell you today and tomorrow is going to be those kind of days. So we're going to go ahead and just drink as much caffeine and coffee right up front, right up here in these early morning hours as we kick off our day. Well, on today's radio program, we do have several large large, big announcements. I would say they're, well, one is definitely huge, and we'll be sharing those with you coming up here momentarily. And we'll be talking about how to make money through a partnership, Private Officer International and Armor College as well. Thursday, April the 28th, 2016, 4 minutes after the hour, 7:04 on this Thursday, just a few short hours, really, at this point, away from the weekend. And, you know, for some of you, that's big news. That means that you're going to get an opportunity to relax and enjoy yourself with your family and do all those great things that you can do outdoors this time of the year. For some of us, well, it's just another day that we have to work, but hopefully you have that ability to have the weekend off, as we're just a few hours away from kicking off that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it won't be long. You know, everyone counts down the holidays, just another 30 days or so before the first official summertime holiday, Memorial Day. That's coming up just about a month away. So just hold on a little while longer. All right. Well, this morning we're going to be talking about misclassification of security personnel information and how that leads to uncounted hundreds, maybe even thousands of uncounted injuries, deaths, and workplace violence statistics, which is very, very important. And, you know, I have to tell you, a lot of people, they just don't understand the importance of, you know, counting all of that data. A lot of people do not understand why it's even necessary. Why do we even bring it up? Why do we make an issue out of it? You know, and we're going to be talking really about the nuts and bolts of statistical data and why it's important to accurately report, and not only report, but to classify everyone who is working in the security role in the capacity of a security officer. We'll be talking about how many companies misclassify and mislead government regulatory officials, OSHA, and others. And it's really doing a disservice to the security industry. And that will be coming up here on the second half of the hour, because it's really, really important to generate the correct data. I really don't think that people get it. And hopefully today, maybe after this morning's segment, maybe I will help to, you know, inform and clarify that up. Well, we're almost at the 400 show mark. We have taken a few breaks and sabbaticals and, you know, over the years, but in the last 8 years almost, we have almost 400 shows, and we're climbing up there to that 400 mark. We will be reaching that just in the next few months. So we hope that you enjoy listening as much as we enjoy doing the radio show. And we really do enjoy it. And hopefully it's been informative, engaging, and it has helped you over the years to be better informed of what's going on in the industry, as well as better trained, because we always try to include some type of training aspect in our radio programs. You know, every time that we do a show, we want someone to learn something. We want someone to be engaged. We want people to walk away informed, to have better not only knowledge but information, to hear what the news of the industry is, things that they may not be getting from their local news, and to go away feeling like this was a worthwhile hour that I just spent with Private Officer International, and we were walking away better informed and better trained than when we came and sat down to listen to the show. So hopefully we've accomplished some of that in our almost 400 programs, and we hope that you'll be with us here coming up shortly, about 2 months or so, when we do hit that 400 radio show mark, and it will be a milestone for us. It's a good feeling. I know that when we hit the 300 mark, it was a great feeling. We celebrated. We had a big show. We had a little bit of a get-together in the office, and now coming up on the 400 mark, well, we're going to have to do something a little bit more extravagant. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do, but we'll do something. Maybe we'll even give away a lot of different prizes to those who are listening on that 400th radio show. We'll see. We'll see what we're going to do, but we'll definitely announce it ahead of time. Well, we do have a little bit of sad news here this week to announce as well. Four security officers so far this week has been killed. The last one was found dead yesterday in Las Vegas, Nevada, at a construction site where the security officer was shot to death. Now, law enforcement from Las Vegas, the Metro Police there, say that they don't know what happened. There's no sign of burglary. It may have been a theft situation, but there's no signs of anything being out of place or stolen. They're still investigating, but the security officer was found shot to death on the grounds. I can't imagine what type of confrontation in the overnight hours could have arose that would have led to the death of the security officer, but it is something that's, you know, being investigated. Another security officer was also shot to death this week. I believe that was Michigan or Minnesota. Michigan, I believe. And also a security officer was run over accidentally down in Florida. But this is four security officers killed so far this week. Now, we have seen this month in the last 3 weeks or so a rise in security officer deaths after several months of kind of a slow start, thankfully so. But we do see a lot more security officer deaths during the months of April, May, June, July, August. More people are out and about. More security officers are assigned to exterior posts and patrols, apartments, special events, you know, different areas where they get into contact with people, nightclubs, you know, and so we do see more security officer deaths during the spring and summer. And well, hopefully this year will be a slow year, but, you know, we'll be watching and we'll be informing, and we'll see how it goes and keep our fingers crossed and, you know, say a little prayer, because I'll tell you, security officer deaths, as we've talked about over the years, has risen, and we have seen steady climb of injuries. And even when security officers are not being killed on the job, they're definitely being injured. You know, hundreds, even thousands a week. It's just not being reported. And we know some reasons why it's not. We'll be talking about that later on in this program in the second half of the hour. How about body cams for security? I know that comes up, that topic comes up quite a bit recently. I know that some private colleges and schools, some hospitals have equipped their security personnel with body cams. You know, some people are concerned about having individuals recorded, especially in sensitive areas like hospitals, and maybe security officers violating privacy or whatever. But a lot of people don't realize, with law enforcement and security, body cams are not on the whole 8 hours of the shift. Body cams are only put on during either a response to a call or a confrontation, an investigation, or whenever an officer is stopping or confronting a person, they then activate the body camera at that point. But it's not steady on. It's, a lot of people think it's just recording everything, every moment, every second. But no, that's not how it works. It would be too much data, you know, too much video at that point. But Anyways, body cameras for security is something that has been brought up numerous times. And I know in places like the UK and Australia for a number of years, they have equipped many of their security people at nightclubs and hospitals and colleges and other places with body cams. We're seeing some companies, we just recently saw a private security agency here equip their some of their security personnel with body cams, and we've seen a number of hospitals and colleges. What do you think? Let us know. Send us an email at thehelpdesk@privateofficer.com, helpdesk@privateofficer.com, and let us know what you think about body cams for private security. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We've got a lot of other stuff to share with you this morning.
I'm an actor, and that qualifies me to talk to you about social issues. And even though my opinion is controversial, I believe that racism is wrong. Now today, what I would like you to do is take a look at your skin color and hug somebody that has a different color skin. We can stop racism together, one hug at a time. Definitely ask permission before you hug somebody. Thank you.
How often do you text and drive? No, really, think about it. You're driving down the road and your phone buzzes, beeps, or hollers. Do you take a peek? If you answered yes, you're risking your life and the lives of others. A recent AT&T survey asked 1,200 teens about texting and driving, and the results were quite scary. 61% of teenagers who answered questions say they look at their phone while driving. 43% of them say they actually text while driving, and they know it's not safe. Because in that exact same survey, almost all of the teens said texting and driving is dangerous. And when they're sitting in a red light, more teens think it's okay to mess with their phones. 73% glance at their messages, while 60% of them send one. But that could be just as dangerous because did you know, thousands of crashes happen each year at intersections with traffic lights. And peer pressure could be to blame because 9 out of every 10 teens surveyed expect a reply within 5 minutes. And adults aren't helping. At least from the teenager's perspective, because 77% of teens said adults tell kids not to text and drive, yet do it themselves all the time. So what will make them stop? 89% of teenagers surveyed said a phone app that prevents texting and driving would be an effective way to get them and their friends to stop. So the next step, download AT&T Drive Mode, an app that helps curb the urge to text and drive. Then, take the pledge and share it with your friends. Texting and driving, it can wait. Hundreds of thousands of people have already signed on. Will you?
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Private Officer Beat on this Thursday morning, 19 minutes after the hour, 7:19 here on the Private Officer Beat. We're glad that you are with us this morning. We're talking about the hundreds and literally thousands of security personnel that are not counted every year, those injured, those killed, and The workplace violence not counted every single year because they're misclassified on purpose many times. They're misidentified, and it's just not being accurately reported statistically, and that causes a lot of problems. We'll be talking about that in the second half of this program, but that's what our show is about today. Now, we do have a lot of breaking news. We want to talk to you, bring it to you right now, and talk to you a little bit about what's happening in the news in Oklahoma. You may remember a reserve deputy sheriff, 74-year-old Robert Bates, was working in Tulsa when he inadvertently shot a suspect that was being arrested. He thought he pulled his taser, but he actually had pulled his firearm and shot and killed him. He was found guilty yesterday of manslaughter, and the jury has recommended that he serve the maximum 4 years in prison. Now, this is a volunteer, 74 years old. He's actually an insurance executive who volunteered his time. He was involved with a number of other deputies while they were watching a suspect, Eric Hayes, who they suspected of having possession of a handgun, a stolen handgun. And unfortunately, the reserve deputy, he got involved in the situation, and like I said, he thought he pulled his taser, but in fact, he fired his handgun. And we've seen this a number of times. In fact, out in L.A., a transit police officer several years ago, the same thing happened there during a confrontation. He said he thought he was deploying his taser when, in fact, he was deploying his handgun. Now, I carry my taser on the opposite side of where my handgun is. Most officers do. I'm not really sure how you can pull the wrong weapon, although when you're in the heat of battle, when you're in the heat of confrontation, sometimes your mind is not thinking correctly. But some police departments have even gone to using yellow tasers to immediately identify when you've pulled the wrong weapon. But unfortunately, this reserve deputy in Oklahoma is found guilty. And, you know, the jury has recommended a strict sentence that he go to prison. And, you know, gosh, you know, if you were to go to prison for 4 years at the age of 74, likelihood of him coming out alive is slim. You know, it's just because of his age. We wish him the best. In New York, in the small town of Frankfort, it seems like a small town mayor has been arrested for the theft of more than 100 road signs belonging to the State Department of Transportation. He evidently was stealing these signs all over the state and then bringing them back and refurbishing them for use in his village and for sale or whatever he was doing. But, you know, quite the story, a mayor stealing a sign or signs, just, boy. In Florida yesterday, a drunk driver went around a roadblock of state troopers during a crash up on the interstate and was able to go around the troopers, and he crashed into a medical helicopter that had landed on the interstate at another accident scene, and the 20-year-old Florida man was determined to be under the influence. He was taken into custody and arrested. It's just unbelievable. You may have seen this recently. Cyber criminals are, you know, they've attacked hospitals. They've held schools hostage for money. They've attacked government entities for money. Well, now they have another target, police departments. They have targeted U.S. police departments, mostly Eastern European hackers are hitting U.S. law enforcement and holding them hostage for large demands, having the money transferred online via Bitcoin, which we've talked about that on the program before. It's technical. Bitcoins is kind of internet money that you can cash into real money. And I don't know. Ask your 12-year-old kid if you've got one. He probably can clear it up and tell you. But anyways, these people are holding police departments. They've had police departments in New Hampshire, Alabama, and New York, where they've actually gotten money from them. And good gig, you know, as long as you can get away from it, get away with it. But, you know, eventually law enforcement will catch up to them. School police officer in Los Angeles has been arrested for sex trafficking of a child. They say officer out there, Officer Estrada with the Los Angeles Unified School District Police has been arrested on that. In Maryland, this is a very interesting story. Maryland Live Casino, a fairly new casino, I guess it's 3 or 4 years old, in Hanover. They were hiring employees and sending them to 12-week dealer schools to learn how to be a car dealer and calling it education and not paying them for their time in class. And a federal court yesterday, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, they reversed a recent decision by a district court in Maryland saying, you know, it's okay. You don't have to pay them. They're trainees. They're, you know, they're taking a class. Well, the U.S. federal court reversed that and said, yes, you do have to pay them. It is actually part of the requirement of the job. And so if you have, you know, on the job trainees, whether it be on post, on a security site or whatever it might be, you have to at least pay them minimum wage, at least minimum wage during that training period. You can't just say it's a requirement. Anytime you put the word requirement in there and you've given them no option, no way out, you have to pay them. It's just like for a meeting. If you say we have a mandatory meeting on Friday at 2 p.m., that means everyone has to be there. You're not giving them an option. You're not giving them a choice. And therefore, you have to pay them for that meeting. Now, if you say we're having a meeting on Friday at 2 o'clock and you know, we'd like for everyone to be here. As long as you don't put that word mandatory in there, as long as you don't, you know, say it's a requirement, you give them a way out, then, you know, you wouldn't have to pay. Also in the news in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a off-duty security officer left his firearm in his girlfriend's vehicle. His girlfriend was taking her 2-year-old child, in the car, and evidently the 2-year-old got a hold of the gun, discharged it, killing the woman, killing the mother. The off-duty security officer may face charges. I don't see how he could be responsible since he left it in the vehicle. It might, you know, it's just an unfortunate accident, but we will be following this story as well. Riverside, California. A burglary suspect who was breaking into a high school over the weekend confronted a security officer at the Riverside High School and assaulted him and tried to get away. Law enforcement was able to apprehend the suspect, who has been identified as Francisco Gomez, and took him into custody. An Albuquerque security officer has been arrested yesterday for intentionally running over a bicyclist who he got into a confrontation with at the healthcare for homeless. According to Albuquerque police, the security officer got into his patrol car and intentionally ran over and injured the man on his bike, knocking out several of his teeth and leaving him with 2 deep cuts on his head and face. The incident was reported at the healthcare for the homeless, and 27-year-old Isaac Barnes, a security officer, has been charged in that. A lot of news happening. We hope that you are getting our news. Go to privateofficer.com today and sign up for our breaking news alerts, because it's very important that you stay informed on what's happening in the security industry. Not only that, but it gives you a lot of training material, a lot of insight as to what's happening in your area and the different areas of security. A lot of people that we know use the news information for their training classes. I'm going to have to start charging them extra for that, though. I'm going to have to start charging a monthly fee. But there a lot of good stuff on the breaking news, and it's important that you, you know, are informed. So you might want to go to our website today and sign up for it at privateofficer.com, privateofficer.com. One more quick break coming up, and we will be right back.
This holiday season, plan a safe ride home for yourself, your family, and your guests. Visit arrivealive.org for some party smart tips, like having alcohol-free drinks and lots of snacks, planning for guests to stay over, and keeping extra cash for taxis. Find out more about supporting sober driving online at arrivealive.org or inquire at your local beer store. Happy holidays and thank you from Arrive Alive.
Look around you. One in four kids in the U.S. faces hunger. It's not always easy to see the signs, but in this land of plenty, there are kids that don't know where they will get their next meal. Join Share Our Strength and Food Network and take the pledge to end childhood hunger here in America by 2015.
They say if you want a wish to come true, never tell anyone. But there is one wish that can make the difference between life and death. And this wish can only come true if you tell someone. Please, let your family know you want to be an organ donor.
Private Officer Beat Radio Show, and it's exciting to be here with you this morning. We want to remind you, of course, that you can always go online at privateofficer.com to become part of our social media network. Join us on Facebook and on Twitter. Those are our really two major social media sites that we use. You can go right there, click on those links and be part of that community. We're also, of course, on Tumblr, Pinterest, and a number of other social media. Check it all out at privateofficer.com. You can also contact our help desk at privateofficer.com 24/7 in case you need any information. If you're a member or non-member, they will be happy to assist you. We told you at the top of the hour, or I told you at the top of the hour, about being able to become a partner with Private Officer International and Armor College and being able to make some cash. We are looking for private security academies, training schools to partner with Armor College, and we can add a lot of new courses and diplomas and certifications. Contact us at helpdesk@armorcollege.org today for more information. And if you would like to get involved in all of the activity here at privateofficer.com, please contact the helpdesk at privateofficer.com, privateofficer.com. You can also submit your news and training events, other things that's happening in your area, simply by going to helpdesk@privateofficer.com at the privateofficer.com website. Or email us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. A lot going on. We told you that we have a brand new partnership with CalSEGA. That's the California Association of Licensed Security Agencies, Guards, and Associates out in California. And we're actually partnering with them right now to offer several free webinars coming up in the next few weeks. One of them is on social media for businesses. And you will definitely want to be part of that. If you are in California or elsewhere, it'll be open, I'm sure, to everyone. We're also going to be offering a live seminar in several regions of California on the use of force, two-day event, a scenario-based training, and we will be telling you more about that coming up. If you're interested in getting involved as far as franchising in Armor College or an Armor Health and Safety Institute, which is a great way of enhancing what you may already have in place, just go to our website at armorcollege.org and submit a little email to us letting us know that you are interested in more information, and we'll be glad to get that out to you. We're talking today about why it's important, extremely important actually, to accurately report security officer injuries, deaths, and workplace violence. We did what they call an OPED yesterday, a little article talking about that very subject. And I don't really think that security company owners mean to, you know, always misclassify or mislead statistical data, but it happens. It really does. And it's important that we try to avoid that, try to accurately report as to the best of our ability what's happening in the security industry. And I'm going to tell you why. First of all, there are 30 states now that have some type of private police. So if you are in, for instance, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, New York, or other states, Massachusetts, other states that have private police, we have, since 2012, been meeting with the U.S. senators and U.S. representatives. We've had a number of conference calls with the U.S. Department of Justice about offering what's called the public safety benefit program to private police. We're not talking right now about non-sworn security. We're talking about private police. But most of those private police actually work for security agencies or security departments inside a hospital or a college. And over the years, we've enlightened and we've opened the eyes of senators, U.S. senators, congressmen, and the Department of Justice as to the true number of private police, security police, sworn police officers working in a security quasi-police position. And we've opened their eyes about how many are injured and killed. I presented statistical data and information to the best of our ability based on what we had, what we could find that was available. And we know that statistically the data is inaccurate, it's incomplete. And we mentioned to them that the true numbers probably will never be known because the information is poorly kept. Prior to Private Officer International coming on scene in 2004, there was no one entity, no one company, no one state or federal regulatory agency that kept true numbers of security officer or private police injuries, deaths, or workplace violence until we came on the scene. And now we try to the best of our ability every day to collect that data. And that, my friend, is a full-time job in and of itself. Now, the importance when we're talking about private security police, the importance of being able to collect that data is because the U.S. Department of Justice oversees and administers what's called the Public Safety Benefits Program, which is a cache of benefits for families of first responders killed in the line of duty. First responders is classified under the law as law enforcement, correctional officers, firefighters, paramedics, forestry personnel, game wardens, and numerous others who are all included under the umbrella benefit program. Now, in 2009, an angry man armed with a rifle shot and killed Washington Holocaust Museum private police officer Stephen Tyrone Johns. He was a six-year veteran there at the museum. He prevented the man from coming in any further, exchanged gunfire with him along with several other private police. Mike Ridgewell also was shot and killed in Washington, D.C. at the Navy Yard on September the 16th, 2013. Now, these officers, although they were working for security contractors in D.C., they were 100% sworn law enforcement officers. They had the full law enforcement authority of any Washington, D.C. district police officer in their jurisdiction, which is on their property. They did not receive, their families did not receive any of the public safety benefits that would have been given to them, educational and financial aid that would have been given to them had they been working for a public entity such as Metro Transit, directly employed for the Holocaust Museum if it was a government entity. Another private police officer that was in the news a few years ago was Sean Collier. He was employed by the MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, but that's a private school. Many people think it's not. Many people believe it's part of the Massachusetts university system, but it is not. It is a private school. He was gunned down by one of the bombing suspects, and because he too was working for a private entity, his family did not qualify for the first responders benefits program either. But I believe that I read that a U.S. senator and several state politicians were able to get together and offer him some type, his family, some type of benefit program. We have talked with officials in D.C. and with the Justice Department about including private police officers such as Officer Collier and Officer Jones and Officer Ridgewell and others in this benefit program. And it will take an act of Congress, a legislative act, to change the law to include them. And we're working on that. It's not an easy thing to do, and it's a long process. But one of the hindrances, one of the things that's stopping us, is that the numbers being reported by security companies and security employers, even private entities that employ proprietary security, is that they inaccurately report the numbers that's happening. So it's very important that we collect the correct data, the correct statistics, the correct information to be able to accurately portray what's going on in the private security industry. On the other side of the coin, the non-sworn security officer. One of the problems that we have in this industry, unlike law enforcement or firefighting or EMS, is that the security companies want to keep everything quiet. They want to keep everything on the down low. They want to keep everything to themselves. And therefore, I really don't know why at this stage of the, this day and age, why they would want to do that, because there's no benefit to them. Some companies, especially large companies, and I'll call them out because, you know, I'm me, companies like G4S, Securitas, and others, they don't want to report that they've had 500 security officers injured this year, or 16 killed. They don't want to call attention to themselves to make it seem like they're a safe, unsafe place to work, or that there's safety issues. They don't want to bring any heat down on them, and so they underreport. We talked about many times, and we've talked about this subject with the news media, we've talked about it with employers. Many times, security personnel are misclassified intentionally. They're called everything but security. There are many times when security officers are called such things as escorts, courtesy officers, event staff, guides, residential service aides, safety officers, safety assistants, ambassadors, and other nondescript titles, just so that the employer can beat the system by not having to go through the regulatory requirement, the training, the licensing, the registration, the insurance requirements. But let me tell you something, friend. If you're sitting at the front desk of a business and you're on access control and you're the person that the employees, the staff, and the customers look to provide those minimal security duties, whether it be responding to a suspicious person, locking up doors, unlocking doors, those are all security duties. And therefore, you're not the desk clerk. You're not a residential aide. You're not a safety officer. You are a security person. You are a security officer. And therefore, you need to have that security officer title. And if it requires that you be licensed or go through a certain amount of minimal training, so be it. Big deal. Your employer will get over it. But I'm on a mission, and it will be my mission for the rest of my life until the day that I am no longer, to make sure that companies properly identify who is doing security duties and who's injured, who faces workplace violence, who dies on the job in the security role, whether it be a sworn or a non-sworn role. The importance of this is that every single year, federal and state agencies like OSHA and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Labor Department and the Justice Department, they look at these numbers to identify the industry where there are safety concerns, to see if there's other things that can be done to make it safer for the employee. And if we don't identify our security personnel correctly, if we call them an ambassador, if we call them a residential aide, if we call them a front desk clerk, when really their full duties, their true duties are to perform security-related duties, then they're not being accurately recorded, portrayed. The statistics don't reflect the true number of security officers killed or injured every single year. And we have proven this fact over and over and over again as we show that there are more people working in the security industry than the Labor Department believe. Now, the Labor Department right now has in the U.S. 1.3 million, about 1.5 million security personnel. But they're not counting loss prevention. They're not counting proprietary. They're not counting people that are called ambassadors or safety personnel or courtesy officer or other nondescript titles. They're not counting those people. So I believe that there's about 2.5 to 3 million overall people in the U.S. who are employed. Now, if you take just 1% of 3 million, that would be 30,000, at least it was when I went to school, 30,000 people, 1% injured every year in the business. That would be extremely minimal. The average employment, the average profession in security, law enforcement, any type of area where the risk is higher, you would expect about 8 to 10%. So at 3 million, you're looking at 300,000 people injured or facing workplace violence every year. We record 75 to 125, 150 security officers killed every year, but I know realistically, those are low numbers. I know they're inaccurate because they're being reported inaccurately. I know that when we started this in 2004, that we found dozens of, when we went back and looked, we found dozens of misclassified employees who were classified as, you know, night desk clerks at hotels and maintenance persons and doormen that were killed in the line of duty when actually they were security personnel, but they were being misclassified, mistitled, whether that, you know, be on purpose or not, who knows? But the fact is this, we need to clearly record the statistical data on these positions. It's very important because in the world that we live in, statistical data is what runs the world. Let's take law enforcement for a moment. Do you think for 1 second that any agency, any sheriff's department, any police department agency is looking at their deaths and injury numbers and workplace violence and going, oh, those are too high. We can't reflect that. We're going to have to lower this somehow. We'll call the police officer, oh, I don't know, traffic enforcement. We'll call him a parking clerk. We'll call him. No, of course not. That would be silly. It is important to identify correctly what the employee does and a true title and classify those injuries, those deaths, those workplace violence, so that we can look at those numbers every year and we can look at the opportunity to help these officers, these families of the officers injured or killed, to help the industry to make it safer. Instead of trying to brush everything under the rug all the time and saying, well, no, it didn't really happen. Didn't really happen. No. And I'll tell you something else, too. I've noticed that the large security companies, when they do have a security officer killed, they never put it on their website. They never look at any police department, any sheriff's department, any fire department, any, you know, public safety entity, when they have a death among their ranks, guess what? They post a memorial. They post something on their front page recognizing, identifying that tragedy. But our largest private security businesses in the U.S. today, and many of the, even the smaller and mid-sized too, they don't do it. They don't post anything. They don't recognize, they don't honor their employee who gave their life to protect others. They don't mention it. I recently went to the funeral of a security officer who was killed in the line of duty. There was one person from his local, it was a major security company, national security company. There was one representative there from his local office. That's it. No employees, no one from the national office, no executives, no honor guard, no nothing. It was like they didn't know him. It was like he wasn't killed on the job, in the line of duty. We need to correct this. We need to change things, and I'm asking each and every one of you today that if you see security employers or businesses that are employing people in the role of a security officer or private police officer, and they are identifying them as something different, courtesy staff, event staff, ambassador, please send that information to us at the helpdesk@privateofficer.com, helpdesk@privateofficer.com, so that we can look into this and try to rectify it. If you see a security officer funeral announcement, please send that to us because we may not know about it. We may have missed it. helpdesk@privateofficer.com. It is important as we wrap up today's show, let me just tell you, it is important, what I could possibly express to you, that we accurately report these numbers so that we can make the industry safer, better, and so that we can recognize those who are killed trying to do their job. It is a disgrace. A disgrace for the security or private police industry for the way that they handle not recognizing those killed on duty, on the job, trying to do their job. I don't know of any other profession that handles it as poorly as the security industry does. And we need to change that. Today, it's all about doing the right thing, saying the right thing. In my final sentence of my article yesterday, I said, and I want to echo this today, give credit where credit is due. Recognize that officer and correctly train, equip, prepare, and identify those on the front line. Because in the U.S. today, private security is protecting, deterring, responding, and aiding in every area of safety, security, and enforcement. And they deserve that recognition. They're not, God knows they're not getting paid enough to be out there. The least that we can do is recognize them when they get injured or when they do something great or when they die in the line of duty. If you have any comments or you'd like to get involved or you want to let us know a situation in your area, please contact the helpdesk at privateofficer.com. Helpdesk at privateofficer.com. And that will wrap up today's show. Please let us know if we can be of assistance to you in any way. Until the next time, God bless, be safe, and we'll see you back here on the radio.